my story begins in 2012. I had a severe mental health crisis brought on by cocaine addiction. So I'm in my late 40s, right? I live in Atlanta, successful business, wife and kids, my young kids, and I do, you know, party time to time. But for whatever reason, this time, and I just come off 5 years of sobriety. For whatever reason, this time when I picked up again, something was different. Something had changed in my brain. And I would get a thought, and then I would get a feeling around it, and then I would get a belief on it, as ridiculous as that may be, and then I would act on it. It got so bad that I actually packed up my bags. I walked down on my wife and kids and my business, my thriving business, emptied my bank account. And for 6 months, I flew around the globe, spending my money and just pissing everything away because all my thoughts were psychotic. For example, while I was talking to my kids, let's say, I would get the idea that they weren't actually my kids, that somebody had replaced them with a doppelganger. And I would believe it, so I'd be kind of cool. I'd be, you know, I'd be like, okay, I got to get out of here. So clearly the cocaine addiction had something to do with it, right? But I was, you know, I was addicted 5 years earlier and that wasn't the case. So something else had shifted. In any case, I ended up homeless on the streets of LA, right? And no money, nothing. And I'm in the middle of summer and I'm like, you know what? There's something else going on other than the drugs because addicts want their money. You know, we don't want to spend our money. You do not want to piss all your money away. So I checked into a psychiatric treatment hospital in LA. And by the end of the year, I'd gotten better. I'd gotten clean and sober. I went back home with the family and I connected with them. When you come out of a mental health crisis and you realize you have an extraordinary ability that you can, in fact, see holographic images around you, you don't want, you. People will say, oh, he's still using drugs. Oh, he's still crazy. Oh, he's, you know, he thinks he could talk to aliens. I took a long time. I mean, years and years and years before I would take the whole non-human intelligence side seriously. In fact, I didn't even, for lack of another word, jump on UFO Twitter until Avril Haines said, listen, you know, the national, you know, director of national intelligence in the National Cathedral. She's like, listen, there are extraterrestrials. There may be extraterrestrials here. I'm like, huh, maybe I should shift gears and get the answers I'm looking for in this community. And that's how I eventually connected with Dean Radin. It still took a minute because I had emailed a bunch of academics. What did I come out of this mental health crisis with? What did I leave behind? Something shifted in my brain, right? One day I'm sitting on the couch, I look over and I literally see these holographic images. Now I know they're not real. Let's be clear. I'm not hallucinating. I know this is outside, or I think it's outside of my mind. And I'm like, wow, I see the back of a dinosaur's back. I see a blood cells moving through a body. I see a slot machine and I see the Grim Reaper. Those are the first four things I saw. So I'm in awe of this, right? I'm literally in awe. And that's the awe-ness of it, the spiritual enlightenment of it, in fact, is one of the reasons that grounded me enough to stop using. I'm like, I don't need anything. This itself is it's not enough, but it helped me kind of center myself. And I'm like, okay, you know what? No one's going to take me seriously if I'm using drugs and I see these things. If I can be clean and sober, plus I wanted to be clean and sober from my own mental health and my family, connecting with my family, which by the way, just so everyone knows, I'm connected with my kids and we're back together. We all love
each other. Congratulations, man. That's really great. That's really great.
Yeah, it's great. It's got a happy ending and we're closer than we've ever been. But
you look very healthful and happy. So
yeah, thank you. Yeah, I am. And I'm so. But I've been on a mission to get answers. And you know, since I've done it, I've learned so much about it. And I call this ability upside. I call it upside vision. So I can see, interact, influence, get information from these holographic images that are everywhere around us. I just happen to be able to tune in and see them.
It's interesting to me because it does draw correlations to my own personal entry point into the UFO subject as well. Like, not the exact mirror reflection, but a pretty similar idea of a culmination of traumatic experiences actually ending up being the catalyst for a really extraordinary vision or sighting or something that then sparks you down this new perceptual journey, this new idea, this new perspective of reality. So I don't have, you know, 3D projections that I see or can conjure up a will, so to speak, but I have absolutely been in that back garden there, getting into a meditative state of mind, and had orange orbs of light fly across the sky and float above the roof of my house. And I don't know what they represent, but it's interesting because it does draw correlations. And who knows, maybe it's a similar type of upsight variant within the spectra of this type of phenomena that you're talking about. Did you have a UFO experience? I don't know if I got this wrong. Did a UFO experience trigger all of this? Or was it actually, do you think, the drug abuse and trauma and then like some strange neural plasticity taking place? Or was there a catalytic event?
So it's a great question. If you want, it's up to you. You know, one of the pictures, this picture, as I said, there's one picture of me, and I got to give a shout out to Olaf Rottner, as everyone, most people know.
Oh yeah, he's the OG of artwork in the UFO community. I love it. He offered to do my orb one so long ago, and I've just been so terrible at sending him a photo. So at some point I need to do it because I really need an original Olaf.
Yeah, you do. He's such a sweet guy, and he's so concerned about getting it right. Anyway, that's a great question. So I told you, as I was flying around the globe, there's a picture Olaf drew of me at St. John's. So now the problem is, it's the whole idea of an unreliable narrator. So I'm definitely high, I'm definitely drunk, I'm definitely on drugs, but I'm in this St. John's hotel room, right? And something is telling me to build this map of a galaxy. It's very similar to the scene in Close Encounters where Richard Dreyfuss makes the potato of the Devil's Tower. It's not very similar to it. It's the same thing, but they made me create, they didn't make me, I did. I got messages, and I created this using the fan as a fulcrum, this whole thing in my room. And I got to tell you, I was there for a month. The staff was, they were like, this man, and they were not wrong, stay out of his room. He just wants us to empty the baskets and leave him alone. But I would draw pictures and I would hang them like they, I would place them where they are in relation to their galaxy and all of that stuff. It was madness, but I knew something was influencing me at that time, but it was doing it in like a, in not a correct way. You know what I mean? Cause the drugs and everything made it deflected, whatever, you know what I mean? Made it fucked up on.
Right.
And again,
right.
Like, but there was no doubt something was influencing me to do these things. And it happened again and again in other ways, but that's the most concrete, you know, odd, peculiar way. I knew something else was coming in that was not typical.
Okay. Now, obviously, a lot of people will just probably say these are like subjective hallucinations and, you know, how do we prove substantially that what you're actually seeing is something that can be kind of rendered down into information that's you know, viable or actionable scientifically. Now, you went to IONS, which is the Institute of Noetic Studies, which was set up by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the Apollo 14 astronaut. It's kind of like a frontier science consciousness studies institute. What was the nature of the visit, and was it about validating upsight?
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to cover there, and those are totally fair questions, and those are the things that I've thought about. And people that around me are like, what about this, this, and this? So let's start with the, is it external or is it internal? Now, the answer is it's both. So first of all, the reason I know it's external is because my eyes focus on these images the same way your eyes would focus on a bird flying outside your window or somebody walking in your front door. Now, two things happen then. One is there's a smooth pursuit eye movement, right? You cannot fake this. So if you follow something across your field of vision that's actually there, you are going to follow it, right? So you can record this with technical equipment. If you're faking it, you get stochastic eye movement and it jumps. That's one way. The second way, actually a few ways, the second way my eyes get tired, they strain, just like when you're looking at something for the long time. And probably the coolest way, or one of the coolest way, is my pupils dilate when I'm surprised or see something arousing. So you cannot willfully make your pupils dilate. It has to come from an external source. So those are the tools we can use to prove or get evidence that it's external. Now, all that said, we didn't do any of that at IONS, right? We had another series of tests. The series of tests at IONS was to do two experiments. One was a control experiment of showing me an image, let's say of the Eiffel Tower, right? And then use my recall, I would think of that image. Now, what we're doing now is we're hooking my head up to an EEG machine. So to recall the image, and I say this because upside is not memory recall or a vivid mind's eye, right? It is something more. So the first one we did is recall. So they check my brain waves while I'm doing recall. Secondly, I would conjure up or manifest this image, the same exact image of the Eiffel Tower, right? We did this through 200 tests. And clearly across alpha, beta, theta, all the waves, some more than others, there was a huge difference. And Ions is writing a blog about this for the layman. That's going to be for both of us will be able to read it. You don't have to be a scientist. Even though they have a peer-reviewed paper, an academic paper waiting to be published, somebody else is translating it for the average reader and for the Ions reader, because obviously most of them are not scientists. So that's what was studied there. So they measured the EEG waves. Now, I was in talks of getting to of going to the Smith Kettlewell Eye Institute to do the other kind of testings pre-COVID, but that fell apart. And and I haven't heard back from them, but that's a long time ago. Now, to me, that's one of the next things that can happen. The whole thing about pupil dilation, you know, proving that I'm seeing something outside. But to your point, my response, like the Eiffel Tower, right? So I conjure that up. So the question is that coming from an internal place? Maybe, probably, I don't know. But if it wasn't, let's say I turned my attention, it was there, I saw it, then I could think, turn that Eiffel Tower into something else. I liken it to this. I liken it to you and I are communicating, right? We're using our voice and our mouth to communicate. We're hearing with our ears, right? It's coming from externally, it's coming in from our ears. I think there's the same physiological element going on, whether it's my eyes or my brain, I don't know. It is both. It's external and internal. And clearly more tests need to be done. And clearly more people have this. I truly believe that.
Yeah, so if they're looking to write a peer-reviewed paper from Ions, I guess they were relatively impressed by what they were seeing, or at least felt like there was enough validity to keep pushing at it and kind of examine it further, right?
Well, I call him the Mozart of EEG papers. He's written over 160 papers.
Wow.
Right. And he's written books that other EEG operators use. And he said it was the most clear observation of a change that he'd seen. So those are his words. His name is Arno. I can't think of his last name. He's a Frenchman. He was absolutely impressed. Like there was something going on. Especially at the alpha wavelength. He so commented, and I thought this was interesting, whether it was the gamma or the theta wavelengths, that the difference he saw was very similar to differences he'd seen at other studies he's done, where they were measuring clairvoyant or psi people, you know, people with psi abilities. And to the point, I do think this is a psi ability.
Right. So, okay, what would you say as a psi ability would be the most beneficial applications of something like this? Like, what exactly has it been able to yield for you personally, and also perhaps for the people at Ions that were having a look at this?
So let's, first of all, you were a student of ufology, and you were a student of consciousness and woo. And I talked to even Dr. Basulka. I took a class from and she's done tons of research on this. There's no research on anybody that has what I have. I found that absolutely extraordinary. There is nothing out there that fits this mold. Now, there may be after this, somebody may come forward, and I hope that's true. They send this. I would like to connect with them if these people are dead or it was a long time ago. So the first thing all, I don't think there's anything like upside. Okay. So let's put that aside. Now we let's couple that with precognition, telepathy, remote viewing, and astral projection, right? Let's start with precognition. Now, this is the most frustrating thing about upside. I will see something that's apparently precognition that I look at, but I don't know it's precognition. For example, I use this example all the time. I'll see a wobbly wheel on a supermarket, right? And I'm like, why are they showing me something so inane as that? The next day, I literally get hit in the leg by a wobbly wheel in the supermarket. The lady says, sorry about that. My shopping cart has a wobbly wheel. I'm like, okay, that's weird, right? I will see a bridge collapse, right? And a couple hours later online, it talks about a bridge collapse. Okay, those are two wins, or whatever, for lack of another word. I'll also see more dozens and dozens of other things that just don't happen. So it happens, can't control it, kind of meaningless. From my perspective, put it aside. Okay? That's the first one. Now couple it with astral projection. Astral projection, you know, when you look out onto the sky, you can jump around from star system or whatever. But from my perspective, this is where abstract knowledge lives. Now, when I was in the first coming out of this, I did a ton of reading on mathematics because for whatever it did, it opened something up in me that made me be obsessed with mathematics. Now, when I'm talking mathematics, I'm talking the history of maths, the people involved, all of it. Now, my mathematical skills are not extraordinary. They're just okay. I can talk about any deep mathematical subject, but I get just as bored as the next guy when the equations come out, and I just don't care. That said, my visual spatial abilities, next level. Like, I can take any manifold, topological space, fold it, bend it, or whatever, in my field of vision. I can do that in real time. So I spent a lot of time there. And the things that we think of as mathematical, They're definitely mathematical tools as the end all of math. Like, for example, the Cartesian coordinate system. There's so much more than that. That is a two-dimensional representation of something that should be three-dimensional or more.
So you're saying that you can visualize like a almost like a separate phase space within 3D space. So
Without a doubt. You
can actually visualize, let's say, higher dimensional objects, an E8 lattice or something like this, but within a higher level of construct than is available technically within our space.
Absolutely. Now, you know the paper that you wrote, that huge paper that I absolutely got lost in some of it? Some of it struck me, though. You talk about complex numbers. You talk about Hamilton cycles. Now, I can see those things. And even though the things you wrote about, some of that are beyond me, some of it I'm like, they're definitely pointing to what I see. So I thought that was amazing. And complex numbers, everyone says you can't see complex numbers, you can't visualize them. That's nonsense. I can absolutely do it.
Well, actually, one of the funnest things I've been doing recently is taking portions of that document and putting it into like a DALL-E AI image generation. So I'll literally take like a dense mathematical formula with some supposition about infolding dimensions and paste it in there. And some of the imagery it's generating is really quite incredible. So if you're in any way getting holographic projections that are akin to that, that must be quite an impressive thing to witness for yourself, personally, at least.
It is. And you know, the things that you, every time you put it up, because I'm intrigued by that, I look at it, I'm like, this is good, this is close, this is not. But you know, AI can get on point or not. But here's the software development. Here's the next step that I want to take this from a business perspective, from a software perspective, from a mathematical perspective. It took me years to get where I am. Almost like the non-human intelligent guide that was moving me forward. They would not let me get to the next level. It was like a gamification. They're like, when you're ready, we'll show you the next part. This level, this thing, it's real. It's not my imagination. It's not something I created. It's something that I've showed. And we could absolutely build this in real time with the right mathematicians and the right software developers, probably people from the gaming community.
When you say build this, what are you referring to?
A software. We could build this. I could create this with a software so everybody gets what I'm seeing, because there's nothing like it. And I follow, these mathematicians to see if they're, and they're mathematicians that use 3D software and stuff like that. And I'm not saying they're wrong, because obviously they're right. They've got some really complex and deep math. This is just different from, in addition to.
Have you thought at all, and this is actually something that was brought up in that AI document, so maybe it's one of the elements that you came across and it struck a chord, but have you thought about biophotons and the idea of like projecting virtual photons? This is something that I've been thinking about in respects to my own experiences, because admittedly, nobody was around to actually be there to kind of be a secondary witness, so I only have my own personal subjective viewpoint on this. However, very visibly, there were these orbs of light that were hovering above my house, so I was clearly experiencing them myself, but they weren't giving off any reflection onto the roof, onto the surface of the roof, which they were literally just above. If they were a ball of light, surely there should be some, you know, surface reflection, but there was none. So they, it wasn't acting like a typical photon. Made me think of the Buddhist tulpa, a psychic projection, a thought form. And so I'm wondering if you feel like there may be some correlation with this idea that we, when we get into certain states, can actually coax what they call virtual photons into reality, this kind of idea of collapsing something into reality through intention and focus. Although you say that it's quite sporadic and unexpected with you sometimes, so it's not necessarily the engagement of a protocol, but do you think there are any similar kind of...
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, for sure. In fact, I'm impressed that you, if they lasted long enough where you saw that wasn't a shadow, you were like, you know, you were so conscious. You were like, okay, you probably got chill bumps. You're like, okay, WTF, like what is going on?
Right? I mean, I wish I could have been an intelligent ambassador, but when they were literally above my house, I was just like,
of course, this is what's going to happen. And the, like, but the fact that you didn't notice there was a shadow. Now, I wrote a paper on Medium a couple of years ago called "The Dark Matter Information Revolution is Coming and it's going to make AI look like a middle school science project." So right now, we think of dark matter. I'll tell you what I know about it. It's not a lot, but it's enough to make me think this might be what it is. Dark matter, the reason I call it dark matter is it doesn't reflect. It doesn't pick up any light. So what you're talking about, you saw, is that, right? You saw it. So maybe we are slowly evolving. Something in our eyes or brain is slowly evolving to see this, these waves. I absolutely think that it will. I clearly think that's happening.
Yeah. And I peering into forbidden veils or hidden veils that are usually just shut off from the default.
You're right. And I think we're driving towards it. I think more people are going to happen. I think whatever reason, something's coming this way and we're coming this way and we're going to connect. And you can look at it as scary because there's definitely going to be some fearful elements, but it's more about an awakening and it's about an education. I think that's what's happening. And I think you, if you've seen it now, then you're going to see more and more again. And I think more people are going to have this happen. And I think more people are going to look for answers, you know?
Yeah.
I feel lucky that I lost my mind because now when that happens, I'm grounded. I'm like, okay, this isn't, you know, this is outside of me, even though I can react internally. I think it's a hidden biosphere. There we go. Let's just call it that, a hidden biosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is another idea that's banded around, the whole shadow biome, just, you know, the idea that something's occupying the space that we're in. It's just a literal matter of what your perceptual bandwidth is tuned to. And we are, in my opinion, highly complex bio-quantum computational systems as human beings, as this body, as this structure. So I think that there's a lot of different avenues of perception that can be coaxed out of existence that we are just shut off to, quite frankly, because you kind of have to be for a certain amount of time to just exist as a normal human being. You can't have dimensions just folding in and appearing and up and up all the time. In fact, I would argue, to be honest, that a lot of the the shamans from back in the day, a lot of them were actually schizophrenics, and they were people that were kind of getting a lot of different input from different areas. And I feel like as a Western civilization, we've kind of shrugged these things off and dismissed them and said it's just, you know, the symptoms of a brain that's not functioning properly. But perhaps it's actually more about people that are just picking up these radio signals, so to speak, in different ways and are just not able to really fit into our default, you know, perceptual mode as a civilization, as a society. But back in the day, a lot of these people were the ones that were in the hut speaking with various ancestral beings and, you know, providing wisdom to the tribe. So it's just interesting how we transition in our scientific perspective, when in reality, it could actually be more about communing with other elements of reality that we've shut ourselves off to. And I agree with you that we're now, at least it seems to be, in a process of almost moving back towards that archaic shamanic ancestral route, but through science and technology and the blueprint of culture today.
Absolutely. So two things that you prompted a thought. The first one, and I want to say this to anybody who's thinking, this is the electromagnetic spectrum, and it could be, don't get me wrong, it could be, but I during my second MRI, because I got MRIs, because, you know, when this happened, I'm like, I've seen so many movies. Wow, I have a superpower, but I'm going to be dead in 4 months because I have a tumor. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is happening, but it's going to have a curse with it. No tumors, no damage from drug use, no strokes, no lesions. Now, I had the foresight to go, all right, this is probably something with the electromagnetic spectrum, and I won't be able to do it inside the big giant spinning magnets. Newsflash, it worked.
Interesting.
So I'm like, yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute. So now I'm like, well, if it's not that, I'm like, well, gravity isn't affected by magnets. So I first started to think about gravity, but then I was like, wait a minute, dark matter doesn't, I'm thinking it's gravity and dark matter, some kind of combination. I wrote about it's gravity jumping, reflecting off dark matter. That's where I am now in the hypothesis. That could change in 4 months. The second thing you said, so think about this, you know, and it goes back to the math part. You know, John Nash, the guy from A Beautiful Mind, he had schizophrenia. Schizophrenia, that's a new disease. He had schizophrenia. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. He was a brilliant mathematician, and he also thought he was communicating with aliens. Somebody asked him why, and he said, because these idea I'm communicating with aliens came to me the same way as mathematical ideas did. So think about that for just a minute. What if this non-human intelligence is like, oh, wait, we've got a human. You know, let's use him as a receiver. Let's show him this game theory, which, by the way, game theory, if it's true, what they showed him helps everyone. It's about putting your cards on the table. At least his version of it is. Everyone knows what everyone else is doing. But he couldn't deal with it. Or more ominously, the government knows it's true, but they said, listen, let's put him off to, you know, schizophrenia. Let's keep him on drugs so he can't do it. I don't know. He eventually said he stopped listening to the messages. And I understand that, you know, but that story is always intriguing me. And the more I read about how far we've come with our, you know, the government and the shit they're not showing us, I'm like, you know, there's certainly a possibility that they knew he was doing something outside with non-human intelligence, even though they write it off as he's schizophrenic.
Yeah, I would agree, actually. And I would say that it speaks to the flow state. It speaks to the intuitive muse. Echoed through time, this weird inspiration that just bubbles up in people, that gives them these eureka moments, that gives birth to Einstein and Tesla and Da Vinci and, you know, all of these different examples of brilliance. And so many of them actually, when you look at some of the comments they've said or things that have been written about them, believed in this intuitive force of creative energy that just, you know, inspired them to do what they were doing. Tesla is a fantastic example of that, with so many different quotes that just speak to this underlying inspiration that seems to just inject itself into someone's mind if they're of a particular receptivity to that kind of energy. And I think people are just, we're all bridges. It's just how wide is your bridge, how much data can get across that bridge, you know? So people are on a varying spectrum of openness to that type of thing, but I do think it speaks to that. And I would also say, just in terms of, you know, things people know, like The Secret, you know, this idea of manifestation being like a genuine secret that the elites have kind of kept away from people because they understand its power. I think there's more truth to that than people might be willing to understand. And this idea, I mean, let's be honest, if it is true that the human being is essentially a dimensional bridge, and if you get into the right states of mind, not only can you cross that dimensional bridge, but you can meet with entities of higher intelligence, you can get insight that will improve you in ways that, you know, you wouldn't have been able to do prior to that. That's very powerful. That's an extremely powerful thing to have, and it doesn't necessarily make for a society that's easily controlled, right? If everyone has access to incredible Akashic record style data at any moment. So the idea that that would be a coveted secret of those that want to have the most benefit, and then you couple that with all of the weird occult stuff that they do that's just literally demonstrable. I mean, there's just evidence, so much evidence of elite groups of occult mysticism and channeling, and, you know, they're into it. So I would say, yeah, it's actually probably likely that not only is this innate, a natural ability that can be stoked within us, it's something that's probably being safeguarded away from the majority of, you know, at least Western civilization. I think the ones that are truly advanced in this, the real magic weavers, are in the Amazon basin.
I mean, where you're talking about, like all these things we know, because all conspiracy theories are eventually proven true, right? I mean, let's think about it. But I think we're getting to a place where the dam is going to break. I think there's so much going on, you know? And I think it's with the help of something I will call a spiritual, something higher, better than the people involved. I say I hope that, you know, you can sit there and make the case. You wonder why they have this occult side. Is it to keep people away, you know, or is it to scare some people away? Or is it everything dark? Because I have to believe, as much as you hear about that, there's got to be some people doing good with the same kind of ability. Maybe they're scared. It's funny to think about it like this. Think about this. It's scary for the people that are doing good to come forward, because there's so much bad and the bad's got the power. That's kind of scary. But if there could be some truth to that.
I'm not one to invoke a full-on dark versus light archetype for the world, because we live in a pretty nuanced world and there's gray areas everywhere. But there is certainly that kind of representation. And, you know, white hat, black hat in terms of the hacking world is something that exists. You got people that want to do good with their programming skills, and you got people that want to do really bad things with their programming skills. So I think the same is with this, because occult practices and mysticism is programming, in my opinion. It's reality programming. It's algorithm of linguistic nature. It's algorithm and code, but it's embedded in mantra and repetition and intention. It's the same type of idea. And so I think that you've probably got, you know, this concept of kind of white hat hackers, gray hat hackers, black hat hackers in the mysticism culture as well. And the ones that, you know, maintain a lot of influence and power would probably be less likely to want to share that secret, because human nature is unfortunately quite corruptible by power and influence. You know, it's one of our problems. So I think you're right. It's certainly a difficult situation to try and come out with these types of amazing ideas if it's actually dangerous information to bring to people. But again, like you said, and I agree with you, it kind of feels like it's all starting to get democratized even more anyway. Like, people are just finding this stuff out. I mean, a lot of it's considered relatively just like new age stuff, like, oh, what, the secret manifestation. But I actually think more and more people are going to start realizing these are genuine abilities, these are genuine elements and expressions of being a human being, that there is this strange manipulation. Why do we have this weird effect on things like photons and electrons, where it seems that just observing it collapses it into its particle form? You know, these are questions that have not actually been answered yet, despite the fact that people want to try and normalize it and, you know, give justifications. We haven't fully understood what we seem to be doing on the quantum realm, on the substructure of reality, what consciousness does to it. So we're at the beginnings of that, and perhaps your upside vision is an expression of a developing and perhaps even dormant, dampened, suppressed ability that's been present for a long time and has only just started to surface in key people like yourself. Who knows? Maybe that's true.
You know, what's cool about that is that, some of the things I see with upside,
yeah,
you think they're true. I can't win a horse race because I've tried. I've tried to, I'm like, okay, Kentucky Derby, and it will show, the funny thing is it will show me the entire race, but it's a lie. It does not care. So in a sense, it's like, don't waste your time on this. We're not going to help with this, right? Now, that said, I've learned that the images that keep coming back are the true ones, right? These are the ones that tend to be true. So there's an image I sent you, and I would love for you, I think you said you're going to talk to Salvatore Pius. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah. I can never know if it's Pius or Pius, but yeah.
Whatever it is, what I say is an image of a double rainbow. Now, when people think of a double rainbow, you can only see a double rainbow flat on. There's no perspective. You can't go to the side of a double rainbow because it doesn't exist. It's an illusion. Now, I can see with upside the side of a double rainbow. I can see that a double rainbow is, in fact, not one rainbow darker on a lighter rainbow on top. This one's closer. This one's farther away. The one is coming towards us, and the other one is going back away from us. Now, that blows my mind. It's consistent. Now, maybe it's not the electromagnetic waves themselves, but maybe it's the dark matter or the gravity connected with it. I'm absolutely seeing another element associated with it that is not possible to see with human vision. And that's some crazy shit. I mean, I'm just going to tell you straight up. And even with the DNA strands that I sent pictures of, they have these candy cane hooks going around a circle. You look through an electron microscope, that's not there. That's ridiculous. You show that a geneticist, or like somebody would make that up. That doesn't make sense. And what's really, 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 really cool about it, there's a before and an after. So the snapshot I give you is kind of like a middle picture. You know, when you have a cell division, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, you know, 3264 turns into a frog, turns into a human. What I'm showing you, there's something before it and there's something after it. And I'm going to use this as a control to see if somebody says they have upsight. If they say see the same thing before and after, I'm like, oh my God, we're definitely seeing something, again, external that exists in the hidden biosphere. And now we're talking, right? Now we're talking. So those are some cool things. And wait, one other thing, which is this is the reason you got me thinking about it. The Big Bang. I see something. This just makes me laugh talking about it because it's so insane. I see the Big Bang and I see how the whole universe has evolved and I see where we are now. Now, I could draw a picture of this. There's a famous astronomers use this famous thing, Big Bang, everything over here. You know what I mean? Billions of years ago, blah, blah, blah. That's so incorrect. That's not how it works. No, I have no credibility. I have no business telling physicists that have spent years saying what should look like doesn't look. But I can tell you this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can absolutely show you what upsight and this thing is showing me. And then we can have a discussion. Because what I see makes sense, too. It makes absolute sense. Especially if we include dark matter and we include the fact that regular matter makes only 15% of everything, you know, when they put it up. There's something else out there that's interacting with us. So that's kind of fun. I mean, honestly, that's kind of really fun when I get into this and pay attention to it. But again, it'll show me some lies. It'll show me bullshit things and nonsense things. And you kind of get, you after a while, you get a nuance. You're like, this is bullshit.
So what do you think that is? Is that, in your opinion, your own neural chatter interfering with this? A little bit like when you're in, you know, meditation and you just get into that great sublime state and then a thought just comes out of the blue and ruins it for you. Is that kind of this error or incorrect imagery maybe just a projection of your own neural noise?
So first of all, thank you for that question. I teed it up and you took it and I didn't know. So if you would have asked me that 5 years ago, I would have said it was this non-human intelligence just lying because there's a trickster element to it, right?
Okay.
Now I'm like, I do believe that's true, but I also believe it's true because they want us to learn the nuance the same way we might tease a child when the child knows something. Wait a minute, you're teasing me. Now, I know that right there is a response to my personality more than anything, but I think there's an element to it. I really do, because I've gotten better at knowing something that's coming in, whether it's true or not. I'm not perfect at it, and don't get me wrong. There's some things that come in. And by the way, there are some things that come in are absolutely horrible. And I've talked about this on podcasts a few years ago. I mean, I've seen any horrible thing you can think from a person can do to another. I've seen things, and you'd look away, just like you'd look away if somebody showed you a video of something horrible. And that can scare people away from doing this.
This is just like a little jump in thought. So it doesn't track with your vision. You can look away. Like if you look away, it stays where it was when it manifested. It doesn't track with your...
Let's say something's there. Let's say there's a train coming at me. I look away and I talk to my wife over there and I come back. It could either be coming towards me closer or it could have changed. Right. So the answer is both. Both and either. Yeah. It's a good question too.
Well, no, you know, it's funny. I mean, I consider myself pretty intuitive and a good judge of character. And you're clearly, I mean, like I can tell that you have absolutely experienced what you're experiencing. Like you 100% believe it, you know, because there are a lot of people that not only get in contact with you to get onto a podcast to talk about something like this, but I'm also quite cautious with, you know, those types of claims, because obviously it's not easy to provide evidence for it. But it's the same for my own subjective experiences. So I always have to, you know, ground that truth of, well, I know that I can't prove my experiences and they changed everything about my life. And I can just tell from the way that you're talking that it so clearly did that for you. And there are interesting correlations just between our own experiences. You believe that it's almost like a step-by-step progressional training or development. I also felt the same about my experiences, because they started off with little white flashes of light or a high volume of what looked like satellites, but too many satellites coming over at once and in frequencies and in volumes that just didn't seem right to me. And this was happening over the course of weeks and weeks and weeks, and I'd see more flashes and strange flashes, and it was like, okay, there's something going on here. There is something. Then I had my experiences with orange orbs of light. It was another upgrade, another step up in terms of realization. And I, you know, like with certain things happened at that time, like some weird intelligent spooks, who knows, kind of got in my head about being really careful of, what are you doing? You're just sending your consciousness out into the ether and hoping what swims up is friendly, and kind of put anxiety into my head over it. And so I've been wanting to step back into that domain of doing that stuff again. But it is just interesting to me. It truly did feel like a progressional kind of, all right, he's only ready for this. Okay, now he's ready for this. Let's just, elevate it a little bit more. And so, yeah, what I'm trying to say here is that I'm actually really conscious of the fact that there will be people who comment saying this is bullshit. And I just want to put it on the record that based on my own experiences, how I felt about them, and listening to the way that you're describing your experiences, I believe you, and I think that there is actually something happening here. I'm not 100% sure what it is, but I don't think you're tricking people. I can tell you believe this.
Yeah, for sure. And there's, maybe there'll be an upside at some point, but I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. And everything, so let's talk about that. So yeah, I think you are going towards something, And, they talk about C5 or heists to try to get these things to come. And everyone's like, well, be careful what you're doing, because you're going to manifest some kind of demon, bad alien, whatever you want, the hitchhiker effect. So I would say I didn't even learn about those things until I'd been doing this for 10 years, right? I didn't even know that was a possibility. So that means I've been contacting these things for 10 years, or something's been contacting me I've been dealing with, and I've been okay. But let's be honest, I wasn't okay. It started out with a complete breakdown. And in my book, I talk about how I was run out of hotel rooms because I thought demons were chasing me out. Now, that could be like just a complete flood of all this stuff. Whatever got in just got in, and it messed with my head. I don't think it could be. It was. But again, unreliable narrator on drugs at the time. So now it's definitely more manageable. And every once in a while, something will come up and I just don't want to engage it, because it just feels creepy. It feels bad. But more often than not, in fact, I feel more like there's a good, let's call it a protective light thing around me. Something that's there that is concerned and cares about and, wants to protect what, I don't know, any kind of word you want to use. Spiritually, I feel protected because I feel grounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, some people are going to say nonsense. Why would I want to engage that? It's silly. It literally is silly. I don't care that they think that.
It's the same for me. It is the same for me, because I'm kind of like, well, I don't give a shit. I know I saw what I saw, and it doesn't matter to me that you don't believe me. But we do have to be just cogent of the fact that we're talking about experiences that at least right now are mainly subjective. Obviously there are ways in which you're able to try and validate this, and I think it's really good that you're in a process, especially with this IONS, peer review process, and hopefully can actually develop a means of justifying this as an objective effect, as something that's actually externalized. But I wonder, what do you think the real kind of future of an upside type of humanity, if that was something that's starting to become expressed, what does that really mean for the future if it's an evolutionary trait?
Survival. I think we're going to need it. I think it's another way to communicate. So I'm communicating with, let's just say holographically communicating with the universe. What? Do we want to say the universe? You want to say non-human intelligence? Whatever it is, it wants to communicate with me and is sending me information. So if I can do this with a non-human intelligence, then I could certainly, if another person have it, do it with another human. So that means we can eventually prove, with or without technology, both two people are communicating non-verbally, non-sign language with gravitational waves, whatever. That is the future. That is what I'm hoping for. And I agree with you. Let's be honest about it. I sit there and say, I don't care what they think. At the same time, I'm emailing scientists to say, get me in the lab. Let me prove it. So my point is, it's not that I don't care. I don't care if they can't add to the conversation. If they say, but I can get you in a lab, then I'm like, okay, don't believe me. Let's get in a lab and do it. Okay. So there. I think we need this. I think, not to get a little scary, but I think something is coming. And I think that's why they call this catastrophic disclosure. The government knows something. And I think what I'm doing and seeing is another avenue. Remember, I have no connections with the government. Zip, zero. I'm nothing. I'm outside. They don't even know. Well, they may know exist by now. They shouldn't care about anything I do except for maybe with IONS. But my point is don't have privileged information from a government. However, there's privileged information from the universe, the Akashic record, whatever you want to call it, the noosphere, these other non-human intelligent beings that seem to be allies. I don't know, you know? And that is very hard to prove. You know, that's going to take a couple more years. We need to get more people with this ability. That's the key. That's my goal, by the way. That's why I can't. That's why, just as a quick aside, I would love people to donate to IONS, you know, to donate to IONS to get more people in there so we can test other people. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to set up at a website to see if you have this ability so people can go. It's not set up yet. So if they have it, because I do think other people have it, they just don't know it, you know?
Yeah, and I think it really does draw correlations to the UFO subject. I mean, a lot of this is, especially in relation to the idea that you're coaxing information from an awareness that is embedded within the actual reality construct, something that is literally embedded within it. This is the same kind of concept, at least in part, that, you know, Carl Jung, Jacques Vallée have entertained with the phenomenon, that it's actually an amorphous, omnipotent form that is just representing through different avatars, through different manifestations, perhaps for different reasons, perhaps even in responsivity to cultural traumas. Like, so you talk about traumas on the individual level and how this, and you're not alone. Again, I told you that my own experiences seem to come off the back of at least some forms of depression and trauma. We're not alone. Lots of people within the experiencer field have a backdrop of some form of traumatic catalyst or series of catalysts. So you think about how these things seem to manifest in some form for people on an individual level with individual trauma. It's not that far out to imagine that perhaps on a collective level with collective traumas, these things actually get sparked, and that again lends credence to the dropping of atomic bombs and, you know, the sudden increase in phenomena. And so it's just, it really is a fascinating discussion on multiple levels, especially as we move into the future with quantum computation and AI, and whether or not, and this is something I'd love to get your opinion on, whether or not technology could assist us in actually promoting and pushing and amplifying spiritual or so-called spiritual truths and like deep principles about reality and our relationship with it. Are we going down the wrong road with technology? Is this a road paved with, you know, annihilation of the species or a conscious AI that comes around and kills us? Or is this going to help us amplify these deep truths?
So I don't know if you know this, but I've definitely thought about that a lot. And here's why. So the tech people, this AI thing, and listen, it's amazing. There is, you know, you put in the IFU chat, TBD, visuals, the whole thing, whatever. You're like, wow, right? So for me, though, I know I call it EI, evolutionary intelligence. Something that is guiding me, right? They have answers to things that I haven't, and I've seen things that I have not seen anybody, any human being do or even discuss or talk about. They ask questions, but they don't have the answers. In my fantasy scenario, I can see a world where I actually have thought about this, and I'll say it out there because it is funny and it can be mocked and I'm okay with it, but it's still fun to think about. 5 years from now, we have a bunch of people with evolutionary intelligence, maybe in fact some non-human intelligence allies, introduce themselves and it's accepted, right? We get somewhere and we have we answer questions that the AI, it's AI, EI versus AI, physics questions that haven't been answered, right? What, how come, well, whatever they are, I can't think of any, but whatever. And then we can have this intellectual discussion and debate. And if the AI, it will show, prove, at least point to that evolutionary intelligence is far and above and different than, better for us than artificial intelligence. Don't get me wrong. Artificial intelligence is going to win hands down with speed, turnaround time, but not new ideas, not creativity. Don't get me wrong. It has new ideas and it has creativity, right? But I don't think it has a candle to evolutionary intelligence if we include non-human intelligence that have been around for millennia or however long you talk. Now that I've thought about that a lot. It's kind of fun to think about. You know, it's like saying how strong you are compared to a truck. You know, it's AI can do things faster, it can do things more, but there's something that we are definitely missing. I know that because I can see it.
I am still torn between whether or not natural evolutionary intelligence, or like this artificial evolutionary intelligence, are even different to each other. Because, you know, and I've said this a few times, I'll probably sound like a broken record for some people, but, you know, since the dawn of humanity, since we sharpened a stick into a spear or banged stones together and made fire, we've propagated technology. Technology has been our jam. That's what we do. It's literally what we have done to get to this point that we're at now, even through, you know, psychedelic substances in our ancestors' past. That's psycho technology. That's utilizing and leveraging methodologies that are extending our influence as tools in some externalized format. So it's some form of a technological asset. And so I just kind of, I'm still torn because of the kind of feverish pursuit towards AI. And again, this is a battle in my mind, because I'm like, well, you know, only a few people are really pulling the strings of pushing AI. I mean, it's going to completely dominate the world, but is this a collective species decision, or is this just the decision of a few extremely influential people that are pushing our trajectory? Well, arguably, yes, they are the ones who are pushing our trajectory, but it is still this kind of incremental acceleration through history of developing more refined, more complex systems of technology, systems of advancement, systems of influence. And what we seem to be doing now is taking our own brain, our own kind of global collective brain, and putting it into some form of intelligence. And I just wonder if that's the natural evolutionary progress of some form of ally arising out of our own innovation that's going to assist us in just kind of hyper-speeding into evolution. Or again, if it's an error, I just don't know where natural evolution breaks away, because, and I'll shut up in a second, but how, you know, technically artificial is not a thing. Everything is the same quantum fluctuations of atoms and protons and neutrons and, you know, all of that. So if everything's the same thing and we are an expression of that thing, then everything we produce is an expression of our influence, right? Everything we do is natural.
No, this is good. I like this. So let's talk about that for a minute. So, and let's talk about it. It relates to what I'm seeing, right? So, like Tesla saw the AC current generator. He said he saw it right in front of him. He built it. So, he was a genius engineer. I'm just a regular guy that sees this thing. Now, my goal, this again, let's call it a five-dimensional plus fluid coordinate system. I see it. My goal is to share it with the world. What does that look like? First of all, it looks like getting together with a bunch of coders and building it and making a technology from it. Once that happens, now we've introduced it to our technology world, our AI, and it's going to have access to the things that I've seen. Now I'm transitioning it and putting it into you know, the digital world. What is that going to do? Because I'm like, wow, why is it showing me this? And I'm sitting here talking about evolutionary intelligence. You're getting a comment, and I'm like, well, you know, you're right. I'm agreeing with you. So we're going to do that. We're going to try to build this technology. And what if the messages I'm getting, and I've thought about this a lot, are from future humans that have figured out how to send, maybe we can't send people in the past, but listen, we could send waves into the past. And what if, you know, because for whatever reason, I'm picked up the messages and this is this loop. What if there's this loop going on? And somehow this influences it. Again, I don't have the answers. What I do have is this extraordinary ability that I think other people are also gonna have, and I think it's gonna help all of humanity for the better. I've gotten that message from the get-go. I almost went. And again, I've been told this. I picked it up. I went through like a boot camp. My crisis was like a mental health boot camp. That I had to come out the other side because, like you said, people are going to call bullshit. They're going to say all these things. I know, and I've heard them in the past, but they're still going to say it more because, especially now, there's more studies. But more important, people are going to say, and probably people that know more than me, hold on, we're getting some of this over here. Perhaps, you know, let's put these things together. So Yeah, so I'm kind of agreeing with you, you know? I mean, it's literally what I'm saying. I want this technology. I want everyone to see it because it will help us navigate the universe. We have no idea. Does Elon Musk really think we're going to use propulsion engines to get across the universe? Give me a break. I mean, that is absolute nonsense. That is
I almost feel like he can't possibly actually think that. Like,
Right. It's a joke. It's like wooden ships. It's like where the Greeks thinking we can take wooden ships to the moon. And maybe they're doing this over here and they're actually doing the work somewhere else.
it's possible, man. Like, it's, I mean, I've got some friends who are pretty high up in certain technology spaces that are like, dude, he's using a quantum AGI computer of some form. Like, he's getting all of his like business and like suggestions from a quantum computer at this point. I'm like, well, that's an interesting theory. I don't know. Like, Elon Musk is an interesting character, and I'm not sure what his real game plan is with space-based exploration utilizing chemical.
Agreed. I don't know either. But when you see it, I mean, even the people much smarter than me must be going, come on, you know, especially in
Yeah.
business, all these rocket scientists, they can only do so much.
Well, I mean, even like NASA Eagle Works are looking at EM drives and stuff like that. So it's like we know that the chemical combustion rocket is not going to get us there. So like, I don't know, man. He must have some background program that he's working, maybe with the government or something. I don't know.
I don't know. It's funny. It's funny. And then, you know, Bezos is doing it too. You know,
Yeah.
Bezos. Right. Now, he's interesting because I like the way he thinks. He said his business was built on the back of an infrastructure of the railroads, telecommunications, so it was relatively cheap. And look, whether you agree with the one or not, he's done. He's certainly been successful in creating this gigantic neural net of connected logistics systems. His goal, he said, and I saw him interviewed around something a year ago, that he wants to do the same thing in space so next generations have it easier. Now, I don't know what he's doing, though, but I just like the way he thinks on that.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's one of those arguments that I think is really relevant is that moving industry, like space-based industry, is probably the most rational thing to try and be focusing on if you want to be honest, save the planet. I mean, we are eating into the raw materials of this Earth, and I kind of feel like you have X amount of time to do that before the Earth is just going to, establish some polar axis shift and shrug you off like a bunch of nits that are just picking a little too deeply. Because I do get the sense that we're almost on a bit of a ticking time bomb. We've got a while, but maybe not as long as people think. And it's a good idea to be looking into the forward future and saying, well, we've got all of this incredible raw material floating around in our like local cluster. That's where we should be trying to get space-based mining. I mean, you can talk about this. There's plenty of people in the UFO field who would say, look, we're already out there. We're already doing the space-based mining. There's already a deep, kind of black space program. I don't know how far into that I'm willing to go, but it's certainly where we should be going. Off-world industry, space-based industry. And again, I'm worried about AI. I'm fascinated by AI. It's a real kind of tearing at both sides of me because it's just like such an incredible glimpse into potential Star Trek, Star Wars style futures with the computational quantum processing of an artificial general intelligence. But then at the same time, it's a crossing into a boundary that we don't, it's, well, that's why they call it a singularity, right? We can't actually fully comprehend what happens if we get some sort of artificial general intelligence. So I'd like to think it's going to help us, but Elon Musk, he said it's 3 years away. Whether you want to believe him or not, he's not the only one that feels that way, that it's got closer and closer and closer, and that we're really realistically only a few years away from a supposed AGI. What are your thoughts on that?
So, sure, maybe. I mean, it makes sense because the leaps they've made, it's incredible. But let's shift gears and talk about quantum. The quantum is the very small, right? What I see is, in fact, very small, you know? So there's things I see, and again, I don't know if it's the quantum realm, but the fact that it comes in and out, it seems like it is some kind of quantum element to it. And I think once other people, subject matter experts on the things that I have touched on realize they may, in fact, also have upside and access to this hidden biosphere, I think that conversation is going to shift. And I think that my goal is to help that conversation shift. And it's going to bring in a completely new conversation around, wait a minute, all this is going on over here with technology. What are we talking about over here on the biologics quantum realm, whatever you want to do, organic quantum realm? I call it the organic metaverse is what I call it.
Yeah.
You know, recognize for organic metaverse. There's something there. Now, maybe these NHIs actually, maybe they store it there for us to find. It may be like the internet. You know what I mean? Maybe we're supposed to find this. And once enough of us can be connected and do it, we're going to see it. Not to shift gears, I want to make sure we talk about this. You know, I had a remote viewing episode, and we didn't talk about other sciabilities. Can we shift gears now?
Absolutely. No, take it away.
Well, it just got me thinking, right? So one of the times, and I've talked about this before, one of the first things I ever thought I was a remote viewer, I was just looking at UpSite, and I remote viewed like a dozen gray aliens on a spaceship, right? And at first glance, again, this is holographic. This is not in the room with me. They're not touching. It's not like that. This is holographic. This is remote view. And they're all standing around this circle. And I say it's a spaceship. It was a ship. There was no controls or anything. And it looked like a table, square table. And all of a sudden, I realized they were all looking down. And they were remote viewing a city or a town, right? And I'm like, wow, I was like in awe. And I realized the eyes would follow the people or the room. It's almost like they were building this town with their vision, or they were seeing it collectively. In other words, they were stronger as a group. Now, let's say these are, let's say they're servers. Let's say they're not even real people. They're computers or robots, and they're doing it. But it was still wild. And two of them turned to me while I was remote viewing them. And this is the first time I got scared. I just jumped out. I was like, wait, they see me. And they started coming towards me. It was like, this was years ago, but it scared the crap out of me. I've since seen things again. I remote view some things again, but that's one of the most extraordinary. And my point is, I think we can learn from them because our eyes, we can remote view. I can absolutely remote view. Can I do it like the military does with a target? Now, they define remote viewing as picking a target, drawing it, and seeing it. Sure, that's remote viewing with the goal of helping out somebody. But the fact is, remote viewing is like singing, right? You can do it, but you can remote view something, but if it's not helping the military or whatever it is, they don't care, and you can't prove it. It's still an ability, but to get at what they want is another ability. It's, you know, another part of this ability.
Yeah, but it's like a militarized, intelligence-orientated version of it, you know.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like they're seeing the people that remote view now, and there's some really good remote viewers. Let's hear. They're seeing a strip of film, right? One strip of film. Oh, God, that's my computer.
I had to do that. I was so confused by that.
It's not me. That's not me. It is me, but my not my. It's not.
I was like, is that UpSite?
So remote viewing, they're seeing a strip of it. I would see the whole movie, but it might not be accurate. So there's work that needs to be done here if people want a remote view. Now, again, to me, that's next stage study of UpSite for a reason. We still need to find out. We need to figure out where these waves are coming from. I would love to triangulate. If we could figure out how to pick up the waves that I'm seeing, and we could triangulate the message back to whatever, wherever it's coming from, right, the external ones, now that would be extraordinary. What if there is, in fact, a spaceship way out there that has the ability to, you know, to in fact, put these images around my head and I respond internally? I don't know. My wife thinks it's coming from my DNA. It's all internal. But I'm like, I can't surprise myself. And your eyes don't get tired. Again, the whole pupil dilation thing is from an internal stimuli. It's just not possible. It's both, in other words, you know. So yeah. The remote viewing thing is really interesting, and it should be explored more at some point. But I think it's premature to jump there because you won't have the success we will have in studying just UpSite. I can get in a lab and do this on demand, right? I can't hit a remote target on demand.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's similar again, similar to you, at least with how I'm kind of looking at my experiences. I just felt personally that the idea, I think maybe because I was going out and I was, you know, trying to make this type of contact protocol and something was responding on a number of occasions. I had four of these separate experiences with the orange orbs and numerous experiences with anomalous flashes of light in the sky that just had no tangible explanation to them. But I was just like, you know, is this aliens in a spaceship just waiting for me to, like, kind of, you know, send the right signal? Or is it actually more just the universe itself? And I'm still actually leaning more towards the universe itself, that there is some form of awareness that's embedded within the actual kind of sublime structure of reality itself, and that there is a responsivity to it. It will respond to you, and perhaps it's all about your own individual journey of learning. And so it will tailor itself towards whatever it is that's meant to wake you up and get you into action and get you into what you're supposed to be doing, right? So it's a responsivity from the matrix itself, from the construct itself, that will tailor itself to each individual person for their each individual purpose. And I just think that, I mean, I'm not outside of the realms of possibility that there are ETs in spaceships that are visiting this planet. I don't discount that. But when it comes to these consciousness, these non-local consciousness phenomena, this responsivity to consciousness in humanity that's from an external force of some form, get the idea that it's actually embedded within the structure, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, when that happens, do you feel... All right, so a couple things. Do you feel, first of all, when it happens, you get that whole feeling of, wow, are you in awe? Are you connected to the one, the source?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it, just quickly to say that the actual thought process, so to speak, because a lot of people ask me, like, you know, what are your protocols? Or did you do the CE5 thing? It's like, it's actually a lot more basic than that. I would just be in my back garden. I'd start breathing, you know, in through the nose, out through the mouth, get into a calm state of mind. And then from that point, I was just very clearly projecting ideas about reality, how I feel about reality, what I hope other things out there might understand about reality. So love being one of the most powerful forces in creation, like, yeah, stuff that people would probably roll their eyes at, but quite frankly, I feel that that's important stuff that actually underpins the most amazing elements of human experience. Who's going to dismiss love? Like, you know, you're going to dismiss the idea that love is important, guys? So it's energetically profound. It's energetically profound. And I was just kind of, you know, sending, projecting, and visualizing that my thoughts were emanating from me and that they were imbued with love and that they were imbued with a desire to connect and a peaceful intention, and was essentially just modeling thoughts like, if there's anything out there that feels this way, that believes this thing, show me. I want to see you. I want you to turn up. I want to see it. I'm ready to see it. I'm willing to see it. And that's when I saw these orange orbs of light and other phenomena. So it's interesting to me that it seems to be very dependent on your level of intention.
Yeah, and your level of acceptance.
And acceptance, right, yeah. Right, yeah.
So, all right, let's keep going down this road. So now, when that happened, within the next couple of days, did two things happen? Number one, instances of synchronicity. And number two, did you get what you would consider a new thought that you might have, like a spark, let's call it that?
Yeah, I actually, especially examining who I was prior to my experiences and who I am now and the things that I, like the information I look at and absorb, I would agree with you that there is also, at least in my case, an instance of neural plasticity, some form of change on a neurological level, because it allowed me and inspired me and kind of like fired me up to just start pouring through government documents, trying to understand exotic physics, trying to understand non-local consciousness, trying to understand all of these very high-level concepts that I was actually starting to be able to grok on a layman level. My physics teachers would be so happy, because I was falling asleep in school. I had no interest in, like, mathematics. I had no interest in physics. And since those experiences with the orange orbs, I have literally now, my entire life has changed, because this is what I do now for a job, is I literally have conversations on these subjects is what I do. So I feel, and I'm cautious to project any sort of like prophet status. That's not what I'm trying to say, but I do feel guided. I feel like I was guided into this because my whole life just started to alter and shift, and the synchronicities were through the roof. And in fact, the day after my first experience with these orange orbs, I had a mark on my arm, which was these three red dots in a perfect triangle shape. And as much as that could just be a prosaic, series of bug bites or whatever, there was no scab, no itching, no bruising, no nothing. It was like shiny, almost scarred over skin, like this weird sheen to it, like an old burn, had that kind of sheen to it. And they lasted on my forearm for almost a year. And that was after the first experience. I literally, the next day, got out of the shower, looked at my arm and was like, what is that? And so it's like, you know, I can't attribute that directly to the phenomena, but again, synchronicities and things that make you question your reality and send me down a completely different life journey, you know, totally different journey.
Yeah. And that's very common with people that have
exactly.
I mean, it literally changed my life too. Again, mine was a little different, but wow, that's great. And I guarantee you, well, I don't guarantee you. I'm sure, I think, I believe that it's still happening now in a less subtle way. I want to say this one, and I wrote about this in my book because this is so I also, when I was unwell, thought that the government satellites were following me everywhere. I thought I was being followed and my every move was being watched. One day I'm walking out a side of the Beverly Hills Hotel, and by the way, I always had my earphones in. This is 12 years ago with this dangling down. I could not really interact with the world. I always wanted to keep to myself. And I had these instances of synchronicity that were as if I was being blocked in a movie. Did you ever see the movie Baby Driver by any bizarre chance?
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Okay. In the very beginning of that movie, there is a sequence where they block it, where he does a trumpet and he's standing in front of him with notes coming out. It lasts for about a minute and a half. So imagine I'm walking outside of the Beverly Hills Hotel. I've got Bruce Springsteen blinded by the light, listening, and all these things come into play for about a minute's worth of the song that were directly related to what I was seeing. I literally was like, what's happening? I was so at all. I couldn't believe it. It was impossible for this to be happening, but yeah, it was. That galvanized me. At first, I was horrible because I thought they were mocking me, making fun of me. You know what I mean? Because I was in such a bad place. But since then, I'm like, it was a dark night of the soul in the middle of the day. It was also like, hold on a minute. We are connected to what you talked about, the source, and it wants us to know. It wants us to pay attention. And if we do, we can continue to go back to that source and get knowledge, information, love, which is clearly one of the most important things, and it can help us navigate our life. Yeah, wow, that was wild. Synchronicity is, I mean, John talked about this, and we will both have something on synchronicity in the next day that is going to make us think back on this conversation. I can guarantee that.
No doubt.
What it is, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I can't remember who said that coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous, but I think it's a pretty profound statement. I think it's a pretty true statement. And also, I think there is a difference between whether you look at life as coincidental or synchronistic. There's a big difference between those two, because synchronistic just talks to, again, an embedded awareness, something guiding, something helping, something assisting or responding to you in some way. The reality itself is malleable. And I think it is, because, you know, even the physicists now, they're like, oh man, it's a simulation. I mean, my position on this is it's either a spiritual one or a quantum computational one, or maybe there's not even a difference between it, but it's certainly simulated in some way, certainly holographic in some way. You know, we think it's physical. We think everything's physical, but we know it's not. We already, even in our scientific infancy in comparison to the cosmos, we already know that physicality is an illusion. It's just fast acting vibratory oscillatory fields. That's all it really is. It's lattices of energy. And so, you know, the idea that you could access almost kind of hidden gaps within that lattice, like information fields that are actually propagating up, but don't maybe get received by everyone. It requires a certain antenna. It requires a certain refined mind, perhaps even certain neuroplastic, you know, moments like these triggers of trauma that activate a certain sense of consciousness, a certain kind of edge away from the default network that just allows that little bit of insight to drip in, something from somewhere else. And, you know, psychedelic experiences speak to this as well. Transcendental meditation experiences speak to this. It's a profound realization that I think is bubbling under the surface of being proven by science. And I think we're actually pretty close to getting to a point where science goes, yeah, you know what? It's a conscious field and we respond to it. It responds to us. Not quite sure what to call it. Don't want to call it God just yet because I'm a scientist, but we're getting there. We're kind of getting there.
Definitely. And, you know, speaking about the psychedelics and psilocybin or LSD.
Yeah.
So there's group hallucinations. You got 10 guys, they're all tripping, they all see them. So think about this. I want to do this too. I want to get into somewhere. I'm the control. I don't need to trip. Get 8 guys trip on mushrooms. If we are seeing something externally, maybe I can project this image and everyone can pick it up. If they all see the same thing, now you're like, it's irrefutable. Now you're talking.
You actually just brought up a really interesting point, and I think that could be right in terms of some form of like hemisphere synchronization across people in the same state. So you're actually, you know, if you're trying to show people a projection that is technically actually manifesting but is not manifesting within a default avenue of perception, then perhaps on some form of psychoactive substance where the neural chatter is decreased and you're entering into a more novel state of consciousness, if you were then able to literally in a sober state, like you said, demonstrate to a bunch of people who can all confirm independently that there is a shape being produced in the air that they're all seeing, that would be a very interesting control experiment. So you should probably consider that, actually. It's a good idea.
So ions about it, yeah.
Talk to ions, like, guys, come on, let me give you all magic mushrooms, and you all just sit in a room and...
Right. Everyone's going to sign me up.
Sign me up, buddy.
Lee, even loose to dreaming, you know, Inception, hypnagogic state, the state going right before your sleep, right? That, I did a lot of research on that. But while you're dreaming, if I'm in a room, if these people dream and I know they're lucid dreaming, you know, check out the REM, or even if they're not lucid dreaming, let's say I go over there and I start thinking about something, wake them up. They're like, wow, that's what I thought about. It's just showing really what it does is proving that there is the receiver in the brain tuned into a frequency. I mean, dreams, where are they coming from? We could go down that whole avenue. What do they mean? But something is coming in. Certain times we just happen to go in and out of it. It's a wave state, right?
Yeah.
I've opened up. It's kept open, and I've been able to, thank God, live and navigate it. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, it is. I had a thought coming out. Don't lose the thought, Jay, because it was a pretty decent one, actually. you know when you're just waiting and you.
No, I do. You should want to
just out of the old. It's okay. So I feel like I might be able to rekindle it, but this concept. No, hang on, come on. Oh, thank God it's pre-recorded because I can always cut it out when.
No, that's okay.
But that's really annoying me because it was right in alignment with what you were saying.
Hypnagogic hallucinations, dreams.
Yeah, you were talking about hypnagogic hallucinations.
Brain.
Okay, yes, right. I think I'm getting there now. So, it's something that I've talked about as well. The human being and the imagination, it's almost like a metaphysical bridge, that there is this bridge to another dimensional space. And although it's kind of a weird idea, it's not my idea, it's an idea that's put out by a lot of people. The imagination, this thing we call the imagination, a hyperspatial, potentially infinite domain where all of the things that we see around us that we've mustered up into reality come from, it all comes from this non-physical, hyper-dimensional space where time doesn't exist. Everything can be manifested instantly. I can instantly picture an object in my head and it's there. And so this space, what if the imagination is a dimensional space that we are connected to as some form of complex instrument, right? This is the human form is an antenna. We're connecting to this imaginary space and that space is actually a dimension. And I truly am starting to think that this whole idea of psychedelic spaces, transcendental spaces, the imagination, dreams, after-death experiences, it's the same thing. It's all the same thing.
So here are my thoughts on that, because people, when I told them I did this, everyone says, oh, you're using your imagination. And I'm like, no, my imagination, I ran an ad agency for 25 years. My job was to come up with good ideas, headlines, and use my imagination. This is not imagination. I'm talking about upside now. So let's talk about that. I'm seeing something that I have not created necessarily. Now, once I'm engaged with it, then I can use my imagination, right? So I think you're onto something, but this hidden biosphere, I don't think that's what you're talking about. I think what you're talking about is either so deep inside us that it's the same thing. It's just, it's either so deep inside us or it's so far away. It's either one or the other, because I think we all have it. It's not the same thing as this biosphere. And I think this biosphere or the remote viewing or the telepathy place, right? I think that's a safe space, right? People talk about telepathy like, oh, I don't want somebody in my brain. That is a fair point. In fact, when these beings jump in my space, it's weird and it's uncomfortable. Or it takes a minute to get used to it, especially if you're thinking a private thought. But there's definitely a middle ground. There's a middle ground where two people can be in a room. This is what I believe, by the way. This is not proven. But I think there's a middle ground where two people can have telepathy, right? It will be proven. We can communicate, but we're not going to go to the deep side of us in our journal private thoughts. It's just another layer, and it's a safer layer, and it's another way to communicate. Now, the only reason I believe that is because I'm communicating with something else, a non-human intelligence sometimes, and again, the source other times. And I've asked Upsight Vision to show me, you know, how do I know what the difference is? And it's funny, it shows me, and sometimes, by the way, it shows me metaphors, right? Sometimes it will show me elbow in a grease pan. I'm like, what do I need to do? They're like elbow grease. I'm like, okay, I need to work. So it's weird. It's kind of weird, right? That's certainly from an internal thing. But this source thing, it shows me a string connected to this bright light source. But then it will show me that other beings have access to it and they can influence the wave. So it's like if somebody can influence what I'm connected to and send something else down it.
So it's almost like the original source message is passing through filters of interference.
Yeah, it's exactly what it's like. It's exactly what it's like. But it's, again, as I said earlier, you kind of nuance and you're like, oh, this doesn't seem like it's safe or this seems like it's BS. Now, we talk about these holographic pictures. Now, mostly they're one color and they're tinted, right? They're screen back kind of thing. Twice I've seen holographic images that are full color, right? Fully colored, but they happened so fast. They came in and out so fast. I couldn't tell if I could influence it or if there was a way to engage it. But that is like a moonshot thing for me. You know, if it's coming in as a screen, maybe in 2000 years, people will be able to literally see like full color holographic communications and we'll be able to communicate that way. I don't know, but it was wild when it's happened. Again, that's a moonshot thing to think about.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like extrapolating out in terms of conscious and psi abilities, personally, I would say, yeah, I think that we're probably capable in the future of psychic projections into 3D space that can be observed objectively by a whole group of people, but we have to be on the same bandwidth of consciousness for that to actually be possible. Again, it's similar to what people have experienced when they're doing these contact work groups where people are out in a field trying to make this type of contact work happen, where they're getting responses and someone in the crowd might be skeptical. And they don't see shit. Everyone else does, but they didn't see it. Maybe they were looking away at that moment and they just didn't see it, or they literally were looking and could not visually see it. There's a lot of examples of this. So I think that there's a perceptual barrier conversation to be had here. And I also think that our society is geared, and I hope this is changing, our society is geared towards, whether purposeful or not, suppressing these types of ideas and this type of consciousness. I mean, you know, Graham Hancock has talked about the war on drugs as the war on consciousness. When you don't have sovereignty over your own state of consciousness, are you even a free human being? When you are not allowed to explore your own state of consciousness with whatever you choose to explore it with, so long as you're not harming anyone else, that should be surely your right to be able to do that. But we're not allowed to do that. And, you know, when you think about the counterculture rise in the 60s and how it was very quickly stamped out with a lot of rhetoric and propaganda and you know, this terrified bureaucratic national security state that was like, oh my God, you know, all of these guys, they don't want to go to Vietnam anymore. They want to have sex and sell watermelon on the side of the street. It's not going to be beneficial for us in the long run. So I do think there is a level, whether it's like tackling, you know, maniacal people like, we got to suppress their consciousness, or whether it's just like, this is not a viable model for our system we want in place, and let's kind of get rid of these ideas that they have, because I don't like these ideas. They're not going to help us grow our business, or they're not going to help us grow our economy. And it's that kind of dusty, you know, non-magical type of person that just doesn't think in interesting ways and just wants to restrict society to a rigid structure. And I think that's more likely than like invoking the Illuminati of some form that's been suppressing us purposefully. I think it's more likely that the system that we've developed over time, even from the beginnings of like advanced agriculture, is a system of communities barricading themselves off, mine, yours, yours, mine, stockpiles of resources. You know, this is how we've started elevating our society. So now it's at this point where it's like, well, we can't risk, you know, these novel catalysts bursting into this space. However, now things are starting to change. Psychoactive research is coming back. Consciousness studies are starting to become more popular. Quantum theory is starting to open up the idea that there's a shared space for physics and biophysics, you know, consciousness and science. So I think that we're actually on the edge of a resurgence, what Terence McKenna would call the archaic revival. And we're actually getting these, you know, ancient teachings and mystery school ideas back into the forefront of the kind of collective mindset. I do think that is happening, but we have been suppressed for a long time and continue to be.
Everything you said, I can't push back on any of it at all. To talk more about the Terence McKenna thing, I've wrote about this too. You know, the stoned ape hypothesis, they did drugs and all of a sudden, just with my experience, I did drugs and something is elevated. You know, it's funny.
Not that we're advocating that, children.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
This is not a foolproof way to become spiritually enlightened.
Definitely not. I mean, definitely not. I've thought about this. Did these non-human intelligence come to me because I already could signal, you know what I mean? Because it was already open. I don't know which came first. I don't know. But something did open and something did shift. But I think it's unstoppable now. I can't imagine it stopping now. And think about this too. I don't want to get political, but all the trauma on the globe.
It's all symptomatic, man. It's all symptoms.
Trauma. So in 20 years, these kids are going to be like X-Men out. I mean, and I really do believe that, by the way. I do believe something happens with trauma. It elevates the consciousness. Where we are now, they're going to have abilities, you know, something new, different, that's going to take us to a place, and hopefully it's going to be better. Because surviving trauma, while it can be, well, there obviously PTSD, things can be learned from it. I would not wish it on anybody. Makes that very clear. But if you come out of it, you're like, okay, wait a minute. And with one of the things I don't want anyone to go through what I went through. I told my wife, I'm like, listen, I need to talk about this. If somebody has upside and they don't go crazy, you know, you're not allowed to say crazy, but if they don't go crazy, I want to let them know, wait, something is going on with their brain. They don't have to take the drugs. If they're schizophrenic, well, I'm not going to be a doctor here. You know what I mean? If it's influencing you, if it's getting in your way of life and it's your life is all, go see a doctor. But they don't always have the answers. They don't. It's silly to think that they do.
Yeah, I agree. And pattern breakage, just on an evolutionary level, is a you know, prerequisite for development, really. So, you know, trauma, although we wouldn't wish any trauma on people because it's not nice to be traumatized in whatever way, it is also, at least on a developmental level, can be seen as a breaking before strengthening process. And that happens on, you know, a biological, chemical, physical level with the development and adaptation over time. And it also, I would say, happens on a personal level. And it is a case of neural strengthening and strengthening of the mind and the body and maybe the spirit, if that's what you believe in. I can certainly attest to the fact that some of my darkest moments I reflect back on now and realize, actually, I feel for that young man, but I am grateful for those experiences. I wish I didn't have to go through that kind of pain to realize this, but at least I realized X, Y, Z. And I think that that's an important lesson for people to recognize, because especially right now in this world, I think we're all traumatized, my brother. I think we are all traumatized in different ways. We have got, you know, so much imagery flashing into our minds 24/7. So much of this world is trying to encourage us to be embraced by fear. And I just think that that's one of the biggest challenges of our time, is like, you've got to push through. You've got to accept that on your personal level, these moments of disruption are necessary. And so look at this collective experience we're having. Look at these disruptions. Look at this turbulence in politics, turbulence in, you know, racial tensions, turbulence in all of these different areas that are clearly manifested right now, like so clearly manifested, that you have to look at it, unless you want to go a little bit insane, you have to look at it in a positive way. You have to find a positive solution. Otherwise, it is just chaos. And so again, I ask people to reflect on their own experiences, their own lived experiences, and how the chaos and how the turbulence of their past actually may have helped a system to strengthen and grow in the future. And I have to look at that collectively on our planetary scale, because it kind of feels like the best evidence that we're transforming.
Yeah. And you know, people, yeah, look, everything you said. So a couple of things too, it's helpful. Number one, you know, we talk about, and this has been great, the whole media just collapsing and that everybody has a voice and the big media is like, well, these guys over here, they know what they're talking about. That's the best sign right there. Now, obviously, there's going to be a whole bunch of crap that comes into our system through every social media online thing. So you're going to get crap. Something's going to resonate with you. And if it doesn't hurt and it touches you spiritually in a good, loving way, lean into it. If you're mad and pissed off, I say stay away from it. But more important, again, I didn't come on here to tell people what to do. But if you, because I always get asked about upside, I'm going to get emails about this. I just know it. They're going to say, hey, I think I have it. They're going to ask questions. Step away from all the social media. I mean, that's not rocket science. That's not anything new, but you need quiet to connect with the source and to see what's available to you. You need to be away from the digital realm to see that. I'm not one of those people that think the electromagnetic waves are messing with you. Well, they are, but I still think you can work with them. I think you can work around them. I'm a big runner. Yeah. I run in the morning. You know, I mean, that's what grounds me. That's what keeps me sober. That's what keeps me grounded to my working out and running. Physically fit makes my brain calm, cool, and collected, and it helps me think, and it grounds me to the world, and that's where I get a lot of this. You can't do upside, by the way, when you're running. You can't do it while you're driving a car. You have to focus on it. So it's not, you know what I mean? That's like, it's not like when you're driving, you can have your brain go, oh, you can daydream. You cannot do upside when you can, but you'll be killed. You're going to hit somebody. So if I'm in the backseat of a car, it can happen. But while you're driving, it can't. So I would just say step away. If somebody thinks they have this, step away. And you know what? It's also a muscle. I've gotten better at it. If it's better, it's like singing a voice. I've trained myself. When I did this, I did it for hours and hours and hours every day. And that can be exhausting. I'm not recommending that. But I know my muscle or whatever this is has gotten stronger. It's a skill. Yeah.
I think it's a psychic muscle. I had one experience with meditation, and I agree. Well, I've done a lot of meditation, but I had one very interesting remote viewee style experience with meditation. I also agree with you on social media. I think that it's again, it's about neural chatter, right? It's about all the neural noise, all that monkey chatter. I can certainly attest, and like recently I've been pissing people off on social media anyway. I do need to take a break. Winter time's my worst time. I still stand by a lot of the things I'm saying, but winter time is my worst time because I just feel depressed in England. We've got no sunshine, it's grey, and you know, it puts me in a bad mood. But honestly, there are times, and it even I think happened this morning, where I woke up and my first instinct is to check my phone. My first instinct is to check, you know, Twitter and X and all that. And I'm reading through, and it literally took about 5 minutes for me to be frustrated. My head was buzzing. There was too much, you know, thoughts of like, oh, I should respond to him. I shouldn't respond to him. I'm not going to respond to that. And so I think you're right that, like, you know, stepping away from that brings the human brain back down to normal levels. We are not used to having all of this information, guys. Like, we're not used to it. Like, for most of the human evolutionary journey, we have not had access to everyone's opinions at once. And so this idea that this is going to be like manageable for our brain in long duration periods, it's not. It's really not. So I need to take a leaf of that advice and like not look at my phone in the morning and start doing, you know, slightly healthier activity. But I think it's good advice for people that feel like they're sensitive to these types of, you know, upside or remote viewing or any sort of psychic ability, is to try and reduce the neural chatter, right? Try and reduce that neural noise as much as possible. But just real quick with the meditation thing, I was sitting on my bed, and this is when I was like trying to do the contact protocol. So I was trying to do meditation more, and I was really quite, you know, inspired and passionate. So I was doing it a lot. Again, just very basic, in through the nose, out through the mouth, nothing special. You know, I don't know advanced techniques, but I was sitting on my bed, my eyes were closed. And this had happened once before where I would actually see, and my bed's over there, so I would actually see this wall fade into view with my eyes closed. So my eyes would be completely closed, pure blackness. And then the front of my room would start to just fade into the static, into the darkness. And this one time, I was sitting on my bed, I got into this state, my room started to fade into view, and I could see this window. And there was a flash of light from a plane, because it's like a flyby area here. I could see like a green flash of light from a signal on a plane wing. And within, literally instantly, I was underneath the plane wing. It was less than a second of actually visualizing this, but I was on my bed, eyes closed, room starts to fade into view. I see the flash of this light, and then immediately I'm underneath the plane of a commercial airliner that's flying through the sky. And then I, like, from shock, opened my eyes into the experience. You know, if I hadn't have been shocked, I kind of imagine I probably could have tracked it for the whole time and stayed with it. Yeah. And I truly believe that local consciousness is not the entire deal of the human being. We're like a little bubble. We're like a collapsed photon or a collapsed electron. And this wave function of consciousness that's omnipotent or can move through the universe is a capacity in our consciousness, but we're mostly in our default collapsed little bubble of, you know, particle localized consciousness. I can see what's around me and I'm in a physical form. This is my coordinated point of view within space and time. But if I get into these meditative states, it almost feels like awareness goes from that particle form to wave function and can visit points in space and time, regardless of your physical presence.
Yeah, and that's literally another version of when I watched The Grays and I got startled.
Right, exactly. Like, whoa, what the hell is this, you know?
Exactly, and it's working, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's back to the point about doing C5 with a group of people, right? You've got 10 people, right? And they're all in the same thing, and you've got one guy that's skeptical, but think about it, and you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. Somebody could be skeptical and say, well, that's ridiculous. One person gets screwed up, but that's not true. If you have 10 people hitting the same note and some guy going la, 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 it's going to ruin it.
Exactly.
Same thing. It is the same idea. And also the group of people act like a chorus. So there's a stronger outpouring of whatever, again, whatever this ability is, whatever we're connected to. So that's, to me, that's so obvious, you know? Actually, that's probably not obvious. I've thought about it a lot.
Well, it's a good analogy, though. I like that analogy. I mean, you can imagine a chorus of people. Everyone's going, right. And one person just going, bah. It's like, well, that's going to ruin the entire thing. Like, we're all going to feel it. And everything is frequency and oscillation and vibration, including your thoughts. You know, this is, it is a little frustrating sometimes, because for me, and I think for you as well, like, some of these things just are very obvious. Like, we put out a form of energy. We're energetic beings. Everything that we're doing, even our thoughts and our emotions, like on an electrochemical, neurological level, it's all sparking energy. And there's clearly a shared energetic frequency that can be, you know, kind of put into like the same group cohesion. Like, this is what they were doing in cathedrals, what they were doing in churches. The reason why the ancient cathedrals and churches and temples have very specific geometric structures to them that harness oscillation and kind of focus oscillation. We understood at one point that this whole idea of group cohesion, group energy sharing is absolutely real. Just because we can't physically see the energy exchanges with our eyes normally, unless you're entering into novel states of perception, it doesn't mean it's invisible. I mean, we leverage invisible electromagnetic, hard radiation, quantum effects. Like, all of our technology is piggybacking off of invisible networks. And yet, people will still argue. This is a thing.
Smart people.
Yes, smart people will still argue that, for example, there's a lot of people that will say that the human brain, the human mind, is so complex. It's more complex than any computer we've ever created, which is true. It is. The deeper they go, they think it might even be on multiple dimensions of like quantum reality that our brain works on. But apparently, that isn't as good as an iPhone.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm sorry, I don't understand that. So you're saying that the iPhone can traverse these hidden electric connections, but we can't? Come on, man.
Right, it's crazy. It's absolute nonsense. And I don't know if it's the academic, you know, I don't know what it is. It's society. People don't want to look like fools, you know, but I don't know what it is, but I know that it's real. And again, when you hear smart people, the people you know are smart, but they just have a barrier up. There's no point to really, again, I've learned this over time, no point to try to engage them about something that they just don't believe. Why? What's the payoff? I want to do something with a payoff. That's why getting in touch with IONS. And I emailed hundreds of academics and academic institutions. I even emailed a guy who studies flight patterns of birds because he studies them using the magnetic photons in the eye. I never heard back from him. But I'm like, I'm grasping at straws. I want answers. I want somebody to, because this is extraordinary. I lived most of my life not having this ability, right? When I had it, I'm like, shit, this is next level, right? I'm going to spend the rest of my life, you know, at least pursuing this to some degree. And, you know, my wife is like, God, you're so pig-headed. I'm like, I'm just driven. I know that somebody's going to, it's going to be out there, and I know other people have it. And in the beginning, I was really selfish around it. Or you're like, oh man, I've got this cool thing. I don't want anyone else to have it. Or I hope no one else has it. But that after like a month, I'm like, that is definitely not the truth. I want other people so we can talk about it and share it. At first, you feel like, I mean, what, it is special. You know, it's cool. It's special. If you're good at basketball or good at anything, you're like, okay, this is cool. I have a gift. But you want to share your gift, man. You want to share it with the world. So I am, you know, so I am. And again, prove it. Like, again, prove it beyond using technology. Because again, if you can prove something and people turn their heads and look to it, it's like Roger Bannister. They said nobody could run a 4-minute mile. Roger Bannister comes up and he runs a 4-minute mile. Physiologically, it was impossible. The next year, there was 100 people or whatever. Next year, 5,000. Once this is going to go like that, it's going to be, I think, like language, actually. I have that belief that it's going to spread like language did, however many, I don't know how long ago, millennia, I don't know, longer than that, way longer than that. But it's going to spread fast is my point. And I also think it's an evolutionary leap, by the way, like blue eyes or red hair or being able to digest milk. I think this is an evolutionary jump. No, I'm not a geneticist, and I'm sure, you know, they will say, well, that's not how it works. I know a mutation works, and then it's an evolutionary change. You know, if the moths during Victorian England, if these moths that lived on trees moved to chimneys and took the background of the background of the chimney because they wouldn't get eaten by the birds, you know what I mean? Because they took in the background. If that can happen in one or two generations, something can happen within a human generation, way more than Darwin said about, you know, drift or anything like that. And you can include trauma. There's things can happen way quicker. And I think there's other forces at play that are making this happen here as well. I don't know what they are. I just think there are.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear we've, as human beings, swapped billions and millions of years of evolution for thousands, then hundreds, now decades of evolution in terms of the acceleration of our species when compared with everything on this planet. We are the outlier that is hyper-accelerating through evolution. So the idea that our evolution could speed up even more is not outside the realms of possibility in my mind, because we're demonstrating that literally all the way through human history. It is the drawing back of a catapult of some form that's about to fly off into a certain direction, who knows where. But it's clear to me personally that we've swapped like genetic changes for the most part for epigenetic changes. So like societal changes and the way in which the world works now is fueling evolution, which I would imagine could actually play a role in speeding up genetic evolution and genetic changes as well. So I agree with you. And I also think that the knee-jerk reactionism, like this dismissing of the mysterious or the dismissing of these ideas, I mean, it is really just a kind of symptom of our moving into the age of enlightenment and Newtonian reductionism and this move primarily in the West. It's a Western scientific adaptation, really. I mean, a lot of the Eastern traditions, even within areas like Russia. I mean, I've spoken to some of these guys who were in, like, had a Russian astronaut trainer from Moscow on, like, a couple of years back. And, you know, they have a whole model called, like, cosmism, which is about the conscious universe and, you, like, looking at the universe as an actual conscious entity. Whereas in the West, we have a very standoffish opinion to that kind of stuff. We've shut ourselves into very rigid academic corridors. And I think we're now breaking out of those because of the evidence that's just literally forcing us to move away from these old paradigms. But it is a symptom. And I think these scientists that have moved through academic channels that rely on a foundation of reductionism or a foundation of, you know, grounded material rationalism, it's just necessary to dismiss the anomalies. And that's really bad. Like, the anomalies are the gaps in your model. The anomalies are the things that challenge your entire model for reality. You cannot just pick them away and put them to the side and say, well, they're just silly little anomalies. Don't worry about that. No. We're moving into a time where the models that we've used to create our society are starting to come under immense stress.
Yes. And you, the other thing is that the academics, they don't want to not know something.
Exactly.
So they would rather to give you an answer that you can't prove and seem like I know all, which is...
Look at Neil deGrasse Tyson. Perfect.
Oh, my God. Forget it. I feel... he's silly, you know? It's silly.
Laughable.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's almost like Newtonian physics and Einstein physics. They're great. But there's so much more. It's almost like, this is cool. Don't look over here, because here's where the real, like Niels Bohr, there's things over there that we should probably shift towards. And now, even now, with string theory, they're talking about all these things that are above my pay grade, by the way, but they still don't have answers. They're just questions. I want to meet with and connect with some really brilliant physicists, tell them what I'm seeing with UPSIGHT and say, hey, what do you think about this? And it's funny, one of the things they talk about is dark matter. It's always used to explain the rotation of galaxies far away. But it's like gravity. It's not just out there. It's also right here. What do we know about dark matter and dark energy in our backyard? And again, dark matter and dark energy are placeholder, but they're a good enough placeholder for me to have this discussion around it, because obviously I'm seeing something. And again, these images, by the way, they move through time. They change, you know? I don't know if I can... I can see them. I can... interact with them, you know, they could, it, like if I have a, they would sit, if you have a picture on a wall, it would sit on a wall, right? Let's say sit in a chair, just like a regular person, but at the same time, it could go through a chair. It can navigate solid objects to how I see them. It could do whatever it wants. And these, again, once somebody else does it, we're going to have some fun saying, okay, what about this? I want somebody to come at me, with a question about UPSIGHT, and I say this with every bit of sincerity, that I have not thought before. I want that so bad, and I want to be like, huh. I want somebody to say, let's get some answers, you know? Because I blocked myself. I literally blocked myself to a few years ago. I said, I'm not going to the New Age, and I'm not going to the ufology. I'm not going to go look at the aliens, because it needs to be taken seriously. So that's 8 years. 8 years of my life that I wouldn't look down this thing until April Haynes, an authority from the national defense. Once she said it, it gave me permission. And I was like, I wouldn't say gave me permission. It was almost like a light bulb went on. And I'm like, okay, it's time, because there was enough distance, right? There was, people knew I wasn't crazy. And let me be honest, you know, when you do what I tried to burn down my house, you know, I did some really psychotic things. You need some distance between that to people know you're better. There's definitely plenty of time to know that. But, you know, in the beginning, it was like, okay, let's stay away from the aliens. Let's stick with the academics. And there's some great notes. I bet, you know, emails exchanged with some really smart people, but nobody had answers. And nobody wanted to really look deeper until just recently. And listen, I got to give a shout out to IONS, man. They're at the forefront. And now they're starting to talk about the UFO phenomena a little bit more. Even though it started with, you know, Edgar Mitchell, they're kind of shifting gears. They're like, okay, you know what? Maybe we could talk about consciousness as it relates to things outside of consciousness. Maybe they're a little bit more open to it because the people that work there are more open to it. And you can't help but pay attention if you're paying attention to our society.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's always been in the remit of IONS because of the founding principles that were of Edgar Mitchell. He truly believed. There's some fascinating emails, man, from like WikiLeaks, where the WikiLeaks emails came out, and it was showing cables between Edgar Mitchell, Rebecca Hardcastle from the Exo Consciousness Institute, and a few others communicating with like Podesta staff and some other people within the DC network. And like they, Edgar certainly had some pretty, you know, like well-rounded ideas and beliefs, you know, about this stuff. And, you know, he did remote viewing protocols when they were actually up in space with these guys on the ground. So yeah, they certainly, I think like you touched on, at least it's changing a bit in recent years, but the idea of like outwardly showing your interest in UFO disclosure and aliens, like that was just never a way to get any sort of academic respect. So that's changing now with things like obviously the Sol Foundation and other institutes that are popping up. It's changing. But IONS has always, I think, in the background been super interested in trying to find ways to bring this conversation in, even if you have to kind of do it subtly. But you know, Dean Radin is someone that I still haven't got on the podcast, and I actually really need to reach out to him. I think we'd have a good chat as well.
I think he would be great, and I think he'd be on the show. And I mean, not that I can do it, but I can send an email and say, hey, I had a conversation. I'll send him this link when it comes up. Why don't you do
Absolutely.
That? Let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah, he's a good guy. It's a perfect fit. And there's some other people there too. You know, the Arno, the guy that did the EEG, he may be a good fit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he'd want to. You know, I can't speak for them, but... but definitely, when this is going, I'll absolutely send it to Dean. I can't make any promises, of course. But we'll finish on this one story. While I was doing the testing, I didn't tell the story, did I? About the gray that came into view. Did I tell the story while I was doing?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so I'm doing the, and I did write about this.
You told us about the one where the grays were all in a circle, but that was...
Okay, so this is a, I'm doing the testing at IONS, right? And I remember... The testing is very, the EEG, my head's, I can't move. You have to be very, it's controlled. So you can't even move your eyes that. You can't, the less movement, the better.
Yeah.
So, and I'm supposed to, I see an image. Let's say it's an image of the Statue of Liberty, right? I have to think about it for 30 seconds. Then I have to manifest it, or then I'm going to see it with upside. Now, while I'm doing the upside part, it comes into view. From time to time, a gray alien would come in, right? And I'm like, come on, guys, leave me. I'm like, they're like, you know, I'm like, okay, I have to ignore them because that's another test. If I shift my gears, right, if I shift my attention, it's going to screw up the whole thing. So I wrote about if I didn't do anything with it. My point is they're always available. They always jump in to see what's going on. It's almost like walking into a forest, right? And the beings in the forest, they're like, who's this? That's actually exactly what it's like. Once you shift your attention, things know that you're shifting your attention there. My point is, what I'm trying to get at was, that's another study. Let's see what shows up with the EEGs. But that has to be we have to design a study to say, okay, what's going to show up? Let's see what brain states are activated. Let's see if the gray show up. Well, what if it's the theta state? I don't know. But so that's a completely different study. But it's funny to think that they showed up to see what was going on, what I was doing. And again, I did my best to ignore them, and they did go away. They weren't in every single, you know, they weren't there for every single time I manifested upside, but they were there for some of them. And I told them, I wrote about all the notes, you know, afterwards. They write about this in the actual report too. They talk about suppressing, having to suppress some things and stuff. So there's a lot of data. I don't know. I just wanted to finish on that.
Yeah. No, the grays fascinate me just because it's such a consistent archetype. Even going back, I mean, some people might argue that it's not the exact representation, but I think it's pretty damn close of these like Australian Aboriginal cave paintings from thousands of years ago. And then there's even, I saw a fascinating interview where this Amazonian tribesman was being interviewed. It was like two of them on a podcast. And they were like straight from the Amazon basin, full tribal community type of thing. And they'd never heard of the concept of an alien. And then the guy showed them a picture of a gray. And he was like, that's Makunwabu. Oh, that's Makanwab.
Wow.
And it was like, he was like, it's an ant that lives underground and can steal your soul, and you need a really good shaman to like bring your soul back. And it's like a strange ant that became a human, and you should be careful with it. And then, you know, yeah. And it was like, what? You know, but they'd never heard of an alien. But the moment they saw the gray, it was like, oh, we know what that is. That's Makanwabu. That's this thing that we have in our culture. So the gray archetype, I don't know what they are. I don't think they're from a different planet. I think it's actually something way, way, way weirder than what we understand it to be. And real quick, even Graham Hancock, when he was on dimethyltryptamine, when he was on ayahuasca in the Amazon basin, had a recounting of a story where alien greys visited him, and he's not even a UFO guy. He just was like, I couldn't believe it, but yes, I had a alien grey, you know, beings come out of the woodwork. So yeah, I don't know what they are, man, but I don't dismiss it because it's just so prevalent. So prevalent.
And you know, I've seen a grey split down the middle in half with upside. So again, remember, this thing lies, but they're not all organic. They're organic, and there's a nanotechnology. I don't know if that's true. This is one of those things I've seen. So it's wild. I almost think some of them are organic and some are not. It's almost like I don't know.
Like a whole mix of different types of variants or something. Well, people say that. People say that there's like, you know, programmed life forms and different versions of it. But yeah, Tom, this has been really cool. Really, really interesting conversation, man. Nice to riff off of each other. I enjoy these types of talks.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks for inviting me on. A couple of years, let me come on again. Maybe we'll do something somewhere. This is good. I like the feedback. And I hope your people, your audience, whoever, everyone enjoys it. Yeah,
I'm sure they will. Yeah,
and if they want, you can find me online. You can send me an email if you're curious about upside or you think you have it, or if you want, if not, donate to Ions, whatever, something. You'll see.
Yeah. I'll put your socials will be in the description box below. So for anyone who wants to follow you on Twitter, remember to check the description box. Follow Tom. Keep up with the upside work that he's up to. And yeah, let's just see where it goes in the future, my man.
Listen, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, man.